This is Radio Talking Book Network, serving the state of Nebraska and Southwest Iowa. Well, I'm super excited for our upcoming community conversation. It's going to be so amazing, despite the protests that I can see through the window already. Since Jane has left us to our own devices, Ryan and I are just running amok, having a great time. And so we brought in one of my favorite people that I was blessed enough to meet through this organization. Without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Ryan O. and John Fullerton.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Community Conversations. This is Ryan O., your station manager. Don't adjust your radio. I know you're used to hearing the beautiful voice of Jane Nielsen at this time, but she is in Vegas right now. I dare not think about what she's up to out there. But we're having a blast here. As Becca said, the tech gremlins are on full revolt, and we're loving it. And we are excited. Folks, you probably knew because we publicized it quite heartily. About 3 days ago, we had Radio Talking Book's 45th birthday. We have been on the air for 45 years since September 3rd of 1974. What an incredible accomplishment. So we're going to take the next 30 to 45 minutes to puff up our chests a little bit and brag on ourselves, because I really feel like it's amazing we've been with you this long, bringing you this service. And there's no better person to speak of the history of Radio Talking Book than our director, executive director emeritus, John Fullerton. He is here with us in studio. John, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Ryan. It's a pleasure to be here.
And we're excited that you're here. And I'll just mention that John is still with us. He comes in every week at about this same time and reads the Wall Street Journal for Friday. So you can hear him later on the station today. John, before we get into the history of Radio Talking Book, as Jane always says, we think of ourselves as guests in our listeners' living rooms. So tell us about yourself, about your history, and what you've been up to of late.
Oh, okay. Well, I joined Radio Talking Book in 1996. I had come from working at Mutual of Omaha, where I was in public relations, community relations, and they had downsized the department, and I was looking for something that would be good for me to spend my declining years, and I ran into this opportunity at Radio Talking Book. So before that, I was born in eastern Iowa, lived in Colorado for a while, lived in Kansas City for a while, but basically have been in Omaha and the Omaha area since about 1972. So again, I joined Radio Talking Book in 1996. I keep busy. I do some other volunteer things besides reading here. I've been kind of a longtime president of the Omaha City Council's Cable Television Access Corporation Board of Directors.
Really?
And, yeah, we don't meet as often as we used to. I've been on and off that committee, mostly on, since a long, long time ago. It's been 35, 40 years. We used to be in charge of more of what Cox and CenturyLink did. Now we really just confine our efforts to working with the public access station. Mm-hmm. So, but it keeps me out of trouble. And I'm enjoying retirement. And we travel when we can, but it's a real pleasure always to come in and see you.
Well, it's
even
a
if
pleasure.
It's not on Friday for the Wall Street Journal anytime, it's great
right.
to great to be with you.
It's always a pleasure when you get here, because it tells me the end of the week is nigh. So I'm always but no, it's always great when you come and visit us and help us with the Wall Street Journal. So John, let me ask you, it sounds like you've been pretty friendly to the broadcast medium, both radio and, as you mentioned, cable television. What sparked your interest in that?
Well, I think my dad, who we might talk about a little bit later, because
I'm sure
he had a lot to do with how Radio Talking Book got started. But when growing up, he was a ham radio operator and an educator, and we just both enjoyed radio and TV. I remember when I lived in Burlington, Iowa, when we were – this will show how old I am – but about four or five, in 1949, we were the first people on the block to have a TV. And so I remember on Saturday nights, the neighbors would come gather in and watch. I don't know what was on. Some kind of an Opry show and music, and but we're just always interested in radio and television.
Right.
As I said, I've been with the City Council's Cable Advisory Committee for a long time, interested in radio and TV. As my wife will tell you, probably a little too much interested in radio and TV. Yeah,
I was just thinking, if you had the neighbors in on Saturdays for television, at some point you probably watched Gunsmoke. Because I think it was a staple of Saturday night TV for years.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And, of course, we're both fans of the Gunsmoke radio show as well.
Yeah, so. It just still holds up so well.
It does. It does indeed.
A big fan of more Gunsmoke on radio more so than Gunsmoke on TV. I like both of them. But
me too.
But
I love Gunsmoke.
The radio show was great.
Mm-hmm. Well, John, let's jump right into it, and let's start with the origin of Radio Talking Book. How did this great institution begin?
Well, going back to 1973, you might know we've been closely associated with KIOS-FM, Omaha's public radio station, and my dad was assistant superintendent of schools in charge of instruction. And he was responsible for telecommunications, and this is actually KIOS's 50th year. So they started a public radio station in Omaha. I remember when I was in Vietnam, and they started to do some early broadcasts at Central High School. My dad would send me reel-to-reel tapes of what they were doing, mostly playing classical music. But he was excited about a new radio station in Omaha, one that would do a lot of good for the community. And then when I got back, I became a real regular listener. But in late 1973, the KIOS had an opportunity to meet the eligibility requirements for the Corporation of Public Broadcasting for funding. In order to comply with those requirements, they had to have more staff than they did. So it was a question of should they hire more people at KIOS or could a radio reading service be started? My dad, again, his name's Dr. Craig Fullerton, he welcomed the idea and strongly supported it. He'd heard of the radio reading service in Minnesota, which was the first one in the country, and he felt it'd be a good, valuable service to the community. So they started to pull together a radio reading service right across the hall from KIOS down at 32nd and Burt, the old Tech High building where KIOS is still situated, and Radio Talking Book was right across the hall. So as I understand it, I wasn't listening back then, but I heard that the first words heard on that first day of broadcast, which as you just mentioned was September 3rd, 1974, it was the mayor of Omaha, Ed Zirinsky, that time, and he was the first person at that time, a pretty small group of listeners heard. So that's really how it got started. And they just continued to grow and grow. And when I was here, there were still some of the readers around. Esther Simon, I think of finally, she has since died, but she was one of the first newspaper readers. And she would come down be a reader, and it was good to have that continuity. We have so many volunteers, as you know, Ryan, that have read here for years and years and years.
It's absolutely. We do a volunteer spotlight of the month every month, and a lot of them we try to talk to some of the veterans. Gary Dietrich, for instance, has been here, I think, since about 79. Laura Beth Barr just retired, but she's been here for a long time.
Yeah.
And Ann Boyce and just a lot of those folks are long-running, and so we, of course, are honored that they've given us so many, many years. Do you remember who the first executive director was?
Yeah.
Was it your dad?
No, he was I think it was Richard Parker was his name. There was also a Richard Anderson with OPS, and Jim Manier was kind of put in charge of putting it together. Jim used to kind of kid that he thought when my dad asked him to do it, he just thought he'd have to stand there and pass wires and stuff to people who knew what they were doing. But
would that it were that simple.
Yeah. But that was part of his oversight duty. So, you know, there were several people, but Richard Parker is really the first. He was an original member of the Central Committee that formed it, and then he was retained as its first director in early 1975. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure they had an executive director before then. And a KIOS employee, Pearl Morrell, who was a great, great lady, she became the volunteer coordinator, but she was still an OPS employee, as was many of our listeners will finally remember Sybil Mahan, at that point was Sybil Ramey, and she worked for OPS, and then she became the volunteer coordinator for many years, and then she left for a while, and then while I was here, probably in, I suppose, the early 2000s, we got her back as the volunteer coordinator.
Yeah, so, she was here when I got here 2 years ago.
Yeah. So for many years, Radio Talking Book used a subcarrier, which we still do, of KIOS, and that's the main way our signal goes out in the Omaha area. It was a little bit later, I think in 1977, in April, I believe, that the Radio Talking Book worked with a station in Seward, Nebraska. Its call letters at that time was KSRD, and I think that's now 91.1. I think that's what's now NET's flagship station, KUCV.
KUCV out of Lincoln.
Yeah, and they became the first place out of Omaha where the Radio Talking Book signal was carried. So a contract was signed and went on from there.
You know, I remember first listening to Radio Talking Book, not on a special radio, because I grew up in Kearney, and at that time I don't think your signal would have gotten to us by your radios, but I used the secondary audio program of our television in the living room to listen to Radio Talking Book. It drove my dad nuts because I was always listening to TV at night when he wanted to watch. But do you remember when you began to partner with PBS and carry the signal on the SAP channel?
Yeah, we had a it was in the early 80s, I believe. Let me think about that. I know we worked with a great – again, this was all before my time, so I'm trusting what I've heard over the years.
We'll forgive
but
you.
But Jack McBride, who was kind of the almost the founder and certainly a major force with Nebraska Public TV, the people here worked with him and got on, as you say, the second audio program of Nebraska Public TV, which just – helped us so much because, as you know, Nebraska Public TV blankets the state.
Yes.
And that SAP, of course, it was before a digital signal, but it was the analog signal, which travels further, at least in my experience it does. Mm-hmm. It's a stronger signal than the digital one. And through that SAP, through TVs, boy, we had tons of listeners that way. So you weren't alone listening to the SAP, but we did get calls from people who said, you know, I'm trying to watch Lawrence Welk and I hear some guy talking. How do I change this? And every TV was different. So you had to kind of talk people through of getting off their second audio programming and getting back onto the main channel. But yeah, I'm sure your poor father, I'm sure you just
lost out on many hours of Magnum PI or whatever in lieu of the Lincoln Journal Star, Omaha World Herald. And of course, it was easier for me in the 80s because a lot of those buttons, there were tactile buttons you could press, you know, open the little panel at the bottom of the TV and just press one button to flip on the SAP. And now it's all menu driven, which is much tougher for blind people to
access. It's very, very hard. And without those tactile buttons, it's just
it is frustrating.
Ridiculously hard. Yeah.
You came in 1996, mm-hmm. and when did you retire?
I retired. I eventually stayed. They couldn't get me away quite right. We hired a new executive director, but I came in and helped for quite a while. I think January of of 2016 was my last month. I probably officially retired in 2015. But and not only me, my wife, my poor long suffering wife, she agreed to do the accounting and the books for radio, and she did that just as a volunteer for at least a couple years. So that was really good too.
Wow.
That she was able to help.
You guys really were all in. Before we continue with the history of Radio Talking Book, tell us about your family. This is something I always ask the people I interview. Is you mentioned your wife, and how about
my wife. She's
kids
a CPA.
Or pets, or?
She's an accountant, and she's retired now. Although she's on the board of the Audubon Society of Omaha, and she spends a lot of time helping them with their financial things and fundraising and all sorts of things. So I kid her, even this morning I was kidding her that she's not really retired and she ought to think about getting off that board. But and we've been married. We got married. I first started writing to her. I met her when I was on leave from Vietnam, probably in about 70.
So you served over in Vietnam?
I did, yeah.
Well, thank you for your service.
Oh, yeah. And shortly thereafter, when I came back, she had moved to Kansas City. I was able to move to the Kansas City area. I asked one of my commanding officers, because I was on orders for Germany, and I said, I'd like to get closer to Kansas, because my wife worked Kansas or Missouri, because my wife works, she worked for Social Security in downtown Kansas City. And I knew about, I wasn't sure where I could get to be close to Kansas City, but the commanding officer, who by then was in the Pentagon, he says, you know, you could go to Leavenworth, Kansas, to Fort Leavenworth, and that's real close to Kansas City. So to make a very long story short, I was transferred there and got to be closer to her, and subsequently we got married, lived in Kansas City for just a year or two. Our son was born down there, and but then we moved up to Omaha, and I got a job with Mutual of Omaha, where I worked until 1995 or so, and then started here in 1996. So I mentioned my son Scott. He now lives outside of Chicago. He's an actuary, and his wife Tricia, and we have two granddaughters, Madeline and Laurel.
I'll be darned.
They live up in the Gurney and Grays Lake area, which is pretty close to Wisconsin, really. So it's a bit of a hike when we drive there. Mm-hmm. And our daughter Christine, she's a librarian, works at Chadron State College up in northwest Nebraska, and we're proud of both our kids, that's for sure. But one's 500 miles roughly to the west, one's 500 miles to the east. So Christine was home this last weekend, which was good, and Scott's in town fairly frequently with business. He works for Aon Company, and so that's kind of the family. My wife is one of 10 kids, and they're scattered all over, so
I'll be darned.
But we enjoy our families.
Well, I've turned into an animal lover, so I have to ask you, do you have any pets?
No, we don't now. We had cats for a while. I grew up as a kid with dogs, and we've had cats. But then it was determined that I'm allergic to cats and cat dander.
Oh, no.
So, and I know you've got a cat, Ryan.
Oh, yeah, I do.
So I'm not going to get too close to you because
Well, I appreciate that, John. I respect the personal space going on there.
So we don't right now, and we sure like animals, but we don't. And my son and daughter-in-law, they have a dog in Illinois, so we enjoy the dog when we're there, and enjoy the neighbors' dogs too.
Great.
We just don't have one of our own right now.
Not one of your going back to the time that you were director, you were here almost 20 years at the helm of Radio Talking Book. What was the biggest challenge that you faced over your time running the station?
Well, depending on who you talk to, you'd say, I'm here for 20 years and I did 10 years worth of work. Or some people might say I did 40 years worth of work while I was here. I don't know. You know, there were lots of challenges. When Radio Talking Book started, it was under funding from the Omaha Public Schools. So that was funding was not a problem. But about in the early 80s, it broke off from OPS and became independent. Now, for many years, we got at least half of our budget from the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired. Mm-hmm. And that was the case when I got here. But there was a certain point where that funding went away. Actually, even in the 80s, this was before I was here, but there was some funding from the city of Omaha, too. But, mm-hmm. That public funding's hard to get. And we haven't had any funding like that for a long time. So, obviously, one of the challenges when I was here was fundraising. Fortunately, one of the things I did at Mutual of Omaha was work with their contributions committee because they had a foundation and they gave money away. So I was kind of familiar with that. Unfortunately, I was familiar with the giving away part, not the getting part. But I did know some people around town and was aware of some foundations where we could. But it was a real blow when we lost our funding from the state of Nebraska. And that's never come back. So, mm-hmm. Fundraising was always a challenge. But, we were fortunate. I mean, we have lots of great individual donors and businesses and corporate foundations and community groups that have so fundraising took a lot of my time, and that was always a challenge, and it's been an ongoing challenge. Another big challenge for us was when TV changed from analog to digital. I mean, we had thousands and thousands of radios out across the state, not only Nebraska, but South Dakota, Wyoming, just small portions of Colorado, Kansas, Missouri, and Iowa. Mm-hmm. I mean, people listened on the SAP, and the radios were tuned to that. Well, when that switch was made to digital broadcasting, those weren't going to work anymore. So there was the job of figuring out and getting new radios that would work with the new signals. And as you know, Nebraska ATV has got, 8, 9 main signals across the state, yeah. And then a whole bunch of translators. Mm-hmm. So they all have to be tuned specifically to those signals to work in that area. And I know now you have some that are tuned to their RRS receivers. They're turned to the one of the digital streams off of Nebraska Public TV, and I just know there's lots of different ways the signal goes out. Right. What I'm trying to say when we're talking about challenges is making that switch from analog to digital was just a huge, huge challenge. Another challenge, when I got here, they had just started using cassettes to record. Before that, they had used reel-to-reel tapes. And overnight, or when you had extended periods of programming, we used VHS tapes. Super long play. I was down at the Omaha Symphony once, and a guy I knew well at KIOS, Bob Cote, who was a wonderful announcer down there, he was recording the symphony, as he did for years and years. And I went up, and I was going to check and see what sophisticated recording equipment. And he was using a VHS tape. So surprisingly, it was the fidelity was good, and that gave us the idea of for long overnights, rather than using those reel-to-reel tape machines, which and we didn't used to be on 24 hours a day either.
Right.
I mean, that
right.
would, but so we use those. That, and then switching to the really nice system we have now from a company called WireReady, mm-hmm. which is a digital system. We don't use cassettes anymore. We don't use anything. It's all computer operated, as you know, Ryan. And people can come in, and there's a nice little keyboard where it tells you where to record and call up the program you want to record. So that making that switch was challenging too, but our volunteers took to it right away, And most of them said they liked it better than cassette tapes. So.
Do you remember – so you were here when you switched over to computer. That was – I think it was about 2015, I believe, is when that – or was it before that?
Yeah, yeah. No, it was about 2014,
okay.
Right in there. Yep, yep. So
well,
that was a big deal. You know, not only – again, it's always about money, it seems. Buying a system like that was costly, and making the conversion so everything – so our listeners didn't notice any hiccups, mm-hmm. that was – you know, that was challenging too. But, it, you know, it went on for a while, and but we're glad it's in place now. I
Absolutely.
Think it's working. It sure always sounds like it's
it
working
does.
Well for you.
It works very well
yeah,
for us.
Good.
We're very happy
good,
with it.
Good.
So on the other side of the coin, I asked you about the biggest challenges. What about the biggest reward or rewards of your job? What do you remember the most fondly or your greatest accomplishments?
The money, Ryan, the money. I was able to retire early, and we spend time at one of our several residences all around the world. No, I think the real reward – was working with our wonderful volunteers. And one thing I miss that I'm not here all the time now is talking to our listeners, mm-hmm. the people who would call in and say, you know, my father just, when he lost his vision, and when people lose their vision, we hear if they were sighted in the first place, they mm-hmm. say, boy, I sure miss driving a car. I miss reading the newspaper. And people have a tremendous sense of isolation, and to talk to family members and to talk to listeners who how much Radio Talking Book means to them. I mean, that just meant a great deal to me. That was the big deal. Working with such wonderful volunteers and talking to listeners, that was the reward.
Well, you're talking – this is a great segue into my next question, which you're talking about the volunteers and the people you worked with. Tell us about some of the memories you have of the staff. For instance, I know that you were here for most of the time when Dick's Lab was here. I barely remember him when I was a kid. Tell me about Dick.
Dick was – you know, I really hadn't been around blind people particularly. So when I – started here, Dick had some vision when he was a kid, but he eventually lost all his vision by the time he was nine. So he was just one of the most remarkable people that I've ever met. You know, we've been lucky with our station managers here. I knew Dick, and then Paul Stebbins was real good.
Yep.
And you're real good. I mean, we're just so lucky here in Nebraska. We've had such outstanding station managers. Dick started at Radio Talking Book. And I know he used to work at Western Electric, but he started Radio Talking Book in 1975 as an announcer. And he eventually worked his way up to station manager and held that position when he retired in 2009. So he gave, you know, 35 years of tremendous service to our organization. He was a great friend and colleague to staff and volunteers and really beloved by thousands and thousands of listeners through the years. He was such a character. Sometimes I'd be driving him somewhere and we'd come to a stop sign and he'd be in the passenger seat and he'd say, I don't see anybody coming this way. And I'd start to pull out and say, wait a minute. And he got me on that quite a few times. But he was, I remember I went to pick him up once. He was up on his roof replacing shingles. I mean, he liked to work with his hands. He was a woodworker. I mean, he was remarkable. And he did so much for the station. One of his favorite projects was the weekly On the Road Again program, where he and a sighted companion Jan Moritz, particularly in the later years. And, you know, I was out of town a little bit in August, and I came back and I saw that Jan Moritz had died.
Yeah, we did a two-part tribute to her on the station after she passed away.
She was well, she was Dick's partner on the Road Again, where they went to all different kind of places and events all over Omaha. And I remember a lot of years we submit shows for awards. We belong, as you know, a national organization called the IAAIS, the International Association of Audio Information Services.
Yes, sir. Just went to their conference a couple of months ago.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you did. It's always worthwhile to go and meet other services. But we submitted their program, I think, in 2002, and it won an award for the best on-location category.
Yes.
It was a five-part show on the sights and sounds of Fontenelle Forest. Mm-hmm. Another thing Dick did, he went on he spearheaded audio description programs, which included mystery bus trips. Some of the venues they went to for audio description were like the Omaha Community Playhouse and the Grand Ole Players, and I don't think they exist anymore. But
right.
But he did a lot of the planning and coordination on his own time, really, outside of the normal workday. So that gives you something to strive for, Ryan, to do stuff off the clock.
That actually sounds like it'd be a lot of fun.
And the other thing he did, they used to go on mystery bus trips where some of our volunteers would pick up our listeners all over town and come here on a given Saturday, and Dick would have rented a bus, and they went somewhere, a mystery bus trip. They didn't know where they were going, but they knew food was going to be involved, and they'd had a good time. And I went on several of those, and Dick would grab a mic and stand in front of the bus and tell jokes and keep everybody entertained, and then we'd show up different places, and it was really good. So.
Let me – just because we've mentioned her before and I met her, she was here about the first 6 months that I was. Tell me a story or two about Sybil.
Well, Sybil, I love Sybil because I always like people who remember my dad. He died in the mid-80s, so he's been gone for a long time. But Sybil knew him real well, and the volunteers loved her. So she would tell me about my dad things that maybe I didn't fully appreciate him like a good son, you know, when he was living. But our volunteers loved Sybil. I mean, she was just so nice and so gracious. And she's living out in Oregon now, last I heard. And I hope everything's going well for her. But we've had lots of great volunteer coordinators, and she was pretty special.
Do you remember any other – because, of course, long before my time, when you were here, do you remember any other staff members who stick out in your memory?
Well, yeah, there's lots. We had lots of good announcers. I mentioned Paul Stebbins. I mean, he'd owned radio – he was our station manager after Dick and before you. His family had owned – his father was a radio guy in Chicago. And he'd grown up around radio, and they actually owned a station in Denver for a while.
KNUS. It's still up and running today.
Okay. So. He was something. I always learned a lot from all our station managers. I mean, that's where I remember when I was growing up, let's say in the late 50s, there were still shows on radio like Gunsmoke and Have Gun Will Travel and Gangbusters and maybe Dragnet, but not too many, not as many.
Oh, yeah.
But I, we would play these overnight, and I really started to really reappreciate how good they were, and I enjoyed listening to them. Yeah, when I got here, we had wonderful announcers, our part-time announcers, Marilyn Deal, who some of our volunteers remembered from Union Pacific, where she used to work, and Audrey Wright. And I can't start naming names because I'm going to forget people. Frank Bramhall was our volunteer coordinator for 9 years or so, and I remembered him because I had gotten to like classical music over the years, and he hosted popular programs on actually KIOS before they went to Morning Edition in the mornings, and then KVNO. And so he was, he was well known. We had several well-known radio people that read for us. Thompson Holtz, this goes back a long way, but Mike Bradley, his real name, I don't think he's in the state anymore, so I can tell you his real name was Mike Badura, but he went by Mike Bradley as his radio name, and he was a radio guy, a news guy, and Joe Nittler, who was a news guy and one of our part-time announcers. So again, I don't want to start naming names because I'm going to forget about...
We've still got a couple of radio people. You know, Deanne Bright is here reading the Council Bluffs Nonpareil for us.
Good,
and she works at iHeartMedia. And Ralph Morocco has even done voiceover.
Yeah,
work.
Ralph's got a great voice.
He does.
And you're lucky to have you make him work like 3 days a week.
We do.
He was in here this morning.
He does the Wall Street Journal a couple of times a week. Can't get enough of his velvety voice.
But. And I attempt to read the Wall Street Journal on Fridays. That's a tough act to follow, I'll tell you.
Oh, you do an excellent job, though.
Well, you're too kind.
Let me ask you this. How important it is in your mind is it to connect with the community? We do these conversations to not only let our listeners become aware of organizations, but for them to become aware of us. How important is that for you, in your mind, to maintain a connection to our local community?
Well, I think it's real important. You know, over the years, on Fridays, I wear my old Radio Talking Book Network shirt because, you know, if I go to the grocery store or somewhere on the way home, people will ask what it is, and then I can tell them, and I help get the word out. Because my experience over the years was people had heard of Radio Talking Book Network, Radio Talking Book Service, but they didn't necessarily know what we did. And it's always fun and a pleasure to tell people about Radio Talking Book and what we do and how, you know, print information should be available to people that aren't sighted just as well as sighted people. I mean, that's just, you should have equal access to printed information It's really important. And some of our best foundations and some of our largest gifts come from people who, you know, one way or the other, were told the story of Radio Talking Book and understand what we do and understand how important it is, because we serve an audience that is typically underserved.
Yes,
I think
absolutely.
I can fairly say that.
I believe that is accurate, yes.
Yeah.
Well, this is, we're coming up on the end of our time, and the hour has flown by, as I knew it would, but there's one question I want to ask you. Well, there's two, really, but second to last is this. Where do you see a radio reading service like ours headed in the future, given the changing landscape of terrestrial radio and the print media?
Well, that's, you know, it's tough, because if you'd asked me that question a couple of years ago, I probably would have answered differently. But it's, people are still interested in information. And no matter which way you get it, I am a newspaper reader. And a lot of our listeners over the years love to get, either were able to read the newspaper themselves at one point, or like that long, extended, really finding out about stuff. You know, you can watch the 10 o'clock news at night, but about 12 minutes of it is commercials, and you're not going to get the in-depth information that's unbiased. I mean, when we're reading the World Herald or the regional papers and there's signs all over the place telling people we're just, you know, keep us straight down the middle. We don't let us know if you're leaning to the left or the right, and just provide information. So that's always important, and the human voice is so important. Again, I where my mother-in-law is down in a nursing home in Bellevue, those radios that the listeners have are so important. I mean, their family can't be there all the time, and it's great to hear. I mean, our volunteers have such great voices.
They do.
And
they really do.
The programs are so interesting and useful, and you just can't, you know, you're talking about how with modern things, whether you're using your phone or anything, there's just not buttons on there. It's not tactile. I mean, it's nice to be able to just turn on a switch and hear everything from the grocery ads to to extended news, to some entertainment, to you know, ways to cope when you lose your vision. I mean, just all kinds of information. That, to me, is never going to go away. But there are more and more outlets out there to get that information. So, but I don't see radio reading services to go away anytime soon. But I know in the last few years, even when I was here, as people would lose their funding, they didn't have a backup source of funding.
Nope.
So
yeah,
when their state funding goes away, you know, people are pinched on money. And so I can see Becca in the other room, so I'll say this. It's good that Becca's raising money because, you know, when so many reading services, whether they're part of a university like Kansas Audio Reader, or whether they're independent like we are, or part of a library, or part of a radio station, just there a lot of them, there are just really a lot of different ways to be radio reading services. But it's important you can stand in your own and you know, have your money coming in. Thank you, Becca.
It is. Yes, thank you, Becca. It is. That's one of the reasons I just think it's amazing. We've hit 45 years and we're a standalone agency. At the conference, we were talking to different radio reading services that we're beholden to, as you say, universities or public libraries or public radio stations, and we don't have those ties. So
no,
that makes Becca all the more important.
Not monetary ties. Right. I mean, we're fortunate. I mean, to be on KIOS's subcarrier all those years, I mean, that's just deeply, deeply appreciated.
Yeah.
As is our organization with, or the way we're attached to Nebraska Public TV and Radio. But nothing can happen without radio coming in. I should mention our listeners. I mean, without money coming in, we just get money from all corners, and it's really, really appreciated.
Well, real quick, before we sign off, John, what message would you like to give our listeners on this 45th birthday celebration of Radio Talking Book?
I hope you don't want me to sing Happy Birthday.
No, you don't have to sing. We'll leave that to Becca, since Jane's gone. But
well, it's just a pleasure to talk with you, Ryan. And I know when I'm talking with you, I'm talking with all our thousands of listeners out there. And we do this for you, all our listeners. And don't hesitate to call and let Becca or Ryan or Jane know what you like and what you don't like, and just keep listening.
Well, John Fullerton, thank you so much for giving us your time today and every week reading the Wall Street Journal, and for all the years of service you've given to the Radio Talking Book Network. This has been Ryan O. In for Jane Nielsen this week. We look forward to having her back next week. In the meantime, we'll turn it back over to Becca in the control room. This is Community Conversations on Radio Talking Book.
Thank you so much, John, for coming in and sharing your story with us. Also, thank you both for inflating my ego considerably. I feel like I am very important now and will probably just take over the world. At the time, of course, I'm just taking over the mic for Ryan, since he's but so kind as to bring you the community conversation today. We will head into our regular programmed afternoon, starting with some bookshelf for you. I thought that I could stretch this out a bit, but I think we also have a wee bit of a PSA that you might listen to first. So back to programming. Thank you for being listeners.